Okay, is there anything you'd like to discuss? Any questions? Anything you'd like to bring up? Our retreatants, five people, five lay retreatants here this weekend. Here's a question. What is my suggestion? Someone else on retreat right now, when the mind just can't stop thinking and planning and worrying about the future. And just at noon, we talked about Dr. Garmini's brother who has passed away. And the death meditation is a good one. How do you know that you're even alive tomorrow? And if you're no longer alive tomorrow, which potentially might happen, how many of the things you're planning and worrying about are of any importance? Now, this is a big iron broom, how you can sweep your mind clean from too much concern about the future. Maranosati. That is the one, it's not the only one, but that's one option which immediately comes to my mind, because we just had someone making merits, the family who passed away on Wednesday night, I think, Wednesday to Thursday night. So it's a good one. Even if you don't pass away today, how many of these issues will be of importance even if you pass away in 50 years? The other contemplation is simply impermanence. One thing I sometimes suggest to people, so today is the 26th of November 2023, and you're probably worrying about all kinds of things that may happen in the future. But I'm pretty sure that also on the 26th of November 2022, you had quite a few things you've been worrying and thinking about and what to do in the future. What were these things exactly on that day? Can't even remember. No? Yeah. So if already after 1 year they are so irrelevant that you can't even remember them, so what do you think about the issues you are worrying about right now? On the 26th of November 2024, you probably can't even remember them. And if you contemplate like that, we see now how ephemeral and impermanent and uncertain that all is. A third approach is that the future is very uncertain. And for sure, maybe you can make plans, but things come very different. I remember when I first stayed in a Buddhist monastery, that was Polgarsdur in Sri Lanka, island hermitage founded by the German monk Venerable Jnana Tiloka in 1911 already. And there was actually another German monk staying, just visiting, Ajahn Chattamala, who is now the abbot or the senior monk in Motodaya, the German monastery for our tradition. And so he was German, he had ordained in Thailand. Then he had gone back to Germany after 5 years visiting his family, and now he spent some time in Sri Lanka. That all made sense to me. As a German monk, obviously you visit your family in Germany. As a German who wants to ordain as a bhikkhu, it makes sense that you ordain in Thailand or that you visit Sri Lanka, a major Theravada Buddhist countries. However, he was on his way to Australia and he was planning to live long term in Australia. And my thought, now this is really silly. Why would a German monk now ordained in Thailand and now he's visiting Sri Lanka, why the heck would he want to go to Australia, to live in Australia? That was my thought. Now look at me. I mean, as I said, since 98, So it was a long time, more than a quarter century by now. This is how uncertain the future is. A very good exercise of mindfulness is noticing these things. Noticing how things you are worrying about, after a short time they become completely irrelevant because things change. And noticing how plans we had, ideas we had, get completely overturned. So these are a few suggestions. The one Maranusati, that's maybe the most powerful, that's a big iron rake, how they call it in the Zen tradition. You just had this Zenny, this Zen teacher, lay Zen practitioner coming. I like the idea of the iron rake. Can rake your brain free from all these worries, the Maranusati. Most issues pale in comparison to the reality of death. Coffin is nice to to use. Having a coffin in your womb, it takes away a lot of proliferation. It's a coffin, and just imagine your body in there. Actually, the German monk I talked about, and a person in the monastery, some Aussie supporters of the monastery, and they joined a coffin building course, and then they offered the coffin they built to the monastery. It was actually a very plain coffin, I must say, and one would have thought this a bit more attractive to compare to what Evangani had on Friday. It was super plain. Anyway, it was meant more like as a little joke. But anyway, the monks appreciated that. And Dr. Chattamalu took the coffin to his kuti and started sleeping in there in the walking path. And he said, he took it a little bit like a joke. But what he noticed, the effect was actually stronger than he had imagined. And he said, when he was clambering into this coffin at night, it was actually quite powerful, because although it wasn't a very nice coffin, it was still easily recognizable. You could recognize it as a coffin. Unfortunately, the coffin might have caused this premature demise, because the coffins are not normally built for living bodies to be in there, and had all these extreme fumes. And he must have left a little slit open when he closed that, that he get air, but he got a bad headache from the toxic fumes from all the glue and and I think the varnish and the paint and so on. So he had to stop sleeping in there. If you find the coffin too expensive or too big, a skull is great, or a skeleton, very powerful. There's some deep-rooted, I think it's instinctual. Now, this is why they put on poison, they may put a skull. And even little kids who can't read and have maybe never seen a skull, who don't really know what that means, they've never seen a dead body and bone remains and all these things. I think instinctively they will not grab a bottle in which has got a skull painted, and it goes quite deep. That can be combined with asubha meditation, with meditation of the 32 parts, ati, bones is one of the 32 parts. But it can also be used for death contemplation and for waking the mind free from all these proliferations. Of course, a real skull is not so easy to get hold of, but even a plastic copy may be having a good effect if you get a really good one. Quite strong. And you can also use it, nowadays the internet, even just images of a skull. You can even print it out, or you can have it on your screen. Skeleton. So you're worrying my studies and next week, and compared to a skull, compared to you lying in the coffin and imagine your own funeral, and they're all crying and so on. This worries. Examine looks really important when you're facing that. But facing your own funeral is a different level of importance and power. In the end, all proliferations, all thinking has to be calmed down by samadhi. That is the only one who can really take that away. But of course, a little bit of catch 22, because in order to develop samadhi, one has to abandon the thinking. And the only way to fully abandon thinking is samadhi. So you have to work on both these sides. One way of doing it is simply the joy and the happiness turning into rapture and bliss. And if you're extremely happy, you're not worrying about anything. This is why people actually enjoy going on this, maybe on a wave or something, maybe they get a little bit ecstatic or they take drugs. Because the effect is that you have so much happiness in that moment that you drop all your worries and concerns, because the feeling is so strong, a pleasant feeling so strong that all your worries get kind of washed away. Of course, if you do that by ecstasy and drugs and strong sensual indulgences, they have many drawbacks and the problems are all back afterwards, and they're often bigger. The samadhi has the same effect, but on a completely wholesome side. So that is the other way of overcoming it, that the joy, gladness, rapture, and bliss in meditation becomes so strong, you just can't bother worrying about the future. You're just bliss out of your mind. So now show your mind how pleasant it feels to just stay with the breath, and mindfully show in your mind, notice, observe how this planning and worrying about the future is just a tremendous burden and gives us so much trouble and unpleasant feeling. You can never sort it. Now that's another reflection. The nature of human life in this kind of human world, you can never sort it. The only way for your meditation to progress, you have to make a determination, okay, for this session now, I'm not planning for the future at all. Even if there's important unresolved issues. A big trap with this future planning is that you feel you have to sort that. And once it's sorted, then you can really meditate with ease. I remember as a junior monk with two vasana when I stayed in Lakkala, and it's really remote, and no internet or nothing. But you still have little issues. Then one of my flip-flop broke. And these people, they looked so poor that I felt really reluctant to even ask them for flip-flop sandals. Looked a little bit expensive. And also you wouldn't want to ask unless they offer, and then they often feel a little bit shy and the language problem, so they may not make a real offer. And then some little thing like that becomes big. I notice that in general, if you're on retreat for a longer time, if you have a very peaceful life, it doesn't mean that you have no issues. There's always some little issue. And then you can worry about the little issue. But the fact of the matter is, even at the time of your death, you will still try to tie up loose ends, and you will not have finished. Even the Buddha was doing that. Wind up to Parinibbana, he was giving the last instruction, and the last disciples, someone wanted him to see him while he is dying. And Venerable Ananda saying has to be consoled, and Venerable Ananda asking how should we behave regarding two females, and Venabhachana getting to the Brahmadanda because he's too conceited as a charioteer of the Buddha, and so on. Even the Buddha was not tying up loose things, not to the very end. And straight away after he was had attained the Parinibbana, then there's already the question coming up. The Buddha said the Sangha can make a unanimous decision to abandon or cancel the minor rules. But unfortunately, no one had asked exactly how to define minor rules. And they already in the first council had a different opinion on that. So maybe he could have clarified that. But there's, even for a Buddha, it's impossible to do that. So you can rest assured, not just you, everyone here, you can rest assured, even when you die at age 100 or 120, there will be unresolved issues and you still haven't figured out certain things. So the only way is to clear that out by making a determination for this session now, no more past or future. It's a misunderstanding. Some people think that you have to be always in the present moment. That is not possible. Even as a monk, you occasionally have to plan a little bit. And there's even a rule that we should know the Uposatha. Like tomorrow we have the full moon Uposatha for monks, and there's a duty to know that. We cannot live like a total hippie and I just don't know anything what's happening. I can't do that even as a monk, much less in lay life. So it's not possible to be always only in the present moment. You have to do some planning. You have to analyze the past to some extent to learn from it. But not when you're now having your formal meditation. You really try to develop the samadhi and insight. The only way is that you have to accept that there are open issues which you're not contemplating now. And particularly in busy lay life, when you calm down, the one effect is that you notice these minor issues. Because life is so busy and you're stressed out, you may not notice it. And then when you're on a short retreat, now you have 3 nights here, it's quite short, or when you have your half an hour meditation during the day, quite natural, some of that will surface. Oh, I still have to do that email and that person. And that cannot be resolved by thinking, okay, I quickly do that all. And when I have nothing to sort out, then I meditate. Because a nothing to sort out state will never be achieved. You cannot sort it. Your sort out may be, are you studying now here?
Studying and working.
And once you have finished the study, then you will work even more. And at some stage, you may be married and then there are kids. Once you have sorted the studies and you have to sort your work, once the work is sorted, then you may have to sort your private life and partner, and when that is sorted, then you may have to sort out the kids. And when that is sorted, then you may have some health issue coming up. And when that is sorted, then the kids may have some issues coming up. And by then, maybe you get made redundant in your job. And there will always be something. So it's not possible. You have to set it aside and you have to train your mind to be able to let that go or set it aside until you come out of your meditation. Else it will not be possible. And that is also a matter of training, gradually training that. To be able to live with this awareness, okay, there are unsorted issues, okay. If I tried to sort everything here with this monastery, I would be nuts already 10 years ago. It's completely impossible. If you have something that this is supposed to be a hermitage, so it's relatively small in terms of people staying here in the community. It's not like Wat Bananachat or Mahavati. I can tell you there's endless unsorted issues all the time. It's not the same with every monastery. One has to learn to... I have a never-ending to-do list. The only thing I can do is reprioritizing which one may be the most important. And usually I've got some emergencies put on top, which constantly pop up. And the importance level in the below is super important and often can't even work on, really. But that's okay. The only way of resolving issues is completely let go of everything. Katang karaniyam. Now that is, the job is done, what the Arahants can say, what the Buddha said. Now when he attained liberation, that's the only thing which one can really bring to an end. Any worldly pursuits have no end. Same with your education. What do you study? Nothing. I know in medicine, someone told me how their professor told them in the first reading of medicine, studying medicine, to become a physician. And he said, in 20 years, we will know that 50% what we are teaching you was wrong. Unfortunately, right now, we don't know which 50% it is. It's even worse than if you study, it can be much worse in nursing, if you study IT, well, maybe every 3 years, 50% of what you learn is completely outdated. So there will be no end to worldly studies, no end to worldly jobs. But one day it will pass away and you have to start anew, and all these unresolved issues are basically resolved by simply you dying. But where we can really get things to an end and really finish the job is on the spiritual path. You can actually finish the Eightfold Path. Like the Buddha said, Bhavi Tanti Me Bhikkhave. The Eightfold Path has been developed. The Buddha could say that. The duty is Bhavi Tanti Me Bhikkhave. The Eightfold Path has to be developed, has to be cultivated. But then when the Buddha freed his heart, he could say after that, the Bhavitong, the Eightfold Path has been developed, has been cultivated, that's done. That's the only thing which you can actually really bring to a successful conclusion. Everything else will finish basically by people either dying on you or you dying. It's the only way that really comes to an end. When we bought this building here, that wasn't built by us, it was built already in 2000 by the previous owner. We got it in 2009. And usually when you buy, you have got this engineer's report, which is still, then you can still cancel the contract. It's conditional on the engineer's report if they find a major structural flaws or something. They didn't find any major structural flaws. They found something rotting there on the... We still haven't repaired that, it still hasn't fallen apart, but it's not structural. But the interesting thing was, in this house, the absolutely longest expected lifespan of anything at all was 60 years, of which 23 years would have passed by now. I think that is something like maybe some of the big bearers under the house, or maybe the... metal post in the concrete, can't remember. But this was the absolute longest. Everything else was shorter. And a lot of the stuff in the house is only meant to last 10 years, maybe a gutter. Or maybe some of these on the facade there in the portico. So if you buy a house in Australia, it will be different houses over here. 60 years, the longest living part of that house. And a lot of the stuff was only 10 years, 15 years, 20 years. Well, that's a good reflection of everything. The only way of resolving is letting go. It's also the only way in resolving the issues with your body. New knee, bad back, headache, and so on. It's not going to get better as you get older, usually. The only real resolution to that is completely letting go of the body. A mind has no longer any attachment or identification to the body. That's the only way of making of really resolving that. Thanks so much for the question. That was quite beneficial, hopefully.